really cool.
Bonjour and welcome to the Rosbys Rugby Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things French rugby. So that's top 14, Pro Day Deux, National and all the stuff in between, which are the towns, cities, bars and delicious grub of France. I am Rob. I am again doing the intro because Richard Crony is not here. And for all you fans of regional accents, Rhys Jones has earned himself a return to the Rosbys Rugby Podcast for the second week in a row. Rhys, hello.
Hello, Rob. I'm very well, thank you. Even better. I thought I might be one of the great one-hit wonders of our generation, but thankfully, I've managed to get a call up again, thanks to Richard's Costa Rican honeymoon. But I am excited to be back and really looking forward to this week because there's a lot of exciting stuff to get through right across the piece. And sometimes it's best to go at the top. Which you might know, you might find one day, but I can go out with my head held high and say, you know, I left at my peak. But I'll continue to listen to the podcast to see, you know, what happens over the coming weeks.
Yeah, because you don't want to miss out on any juicy tips for trips to France or anything like that, which is what we're also all about. But anyway, I think this week we just want to get straight into it, don't we? Because
it
was a fantastic weekend. Personally, I think the last eight or the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup, I genuinely think that is my favourite weekend of the rugby year.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's...
Of all,
genuinely, because you get the quarterfinals, you generally get four epic games that are all going to be tight. They're all going to be ferociously competitive with some great supporters, some great atmospheres. Whereas like Super Saturday, you only get like three and they're all on the same day. Autumn Internationals, you never know quite what you're going to get. If it's like a final of a competition where you only get one game. Whereas the quarterfinal weekend, you get the whole weekend, wall-to-wall, top-level rugby with some... And just like some of the down the years, like the Heineken Cup has produced some of the great, epic games.
It really has. And I think the one good thing, really great thing about quarterfinals is you don't have it like you do in sort of the previous round where you get some teams, and I've got thoughts on this, but take a second string side thinking they're going to lose away from home. Everybody is coming full throttle because everyone thinks they've got a chance. Everyone is playing.
They're in the mixer now. Yeah.
They're in the mixer. You know, you are three games away from winning it. You don't have to think, oh, it's four games. Have I got, you know, is it the Pro 14? Where do we stand? These are eight high quality sides who are completely in the mixer. And they've got absolutely nothing to lose by throwing everything at it, whether it's Exeter, you know, even if it's away from home and the others fell on, they've got nothing to lose by throwing everything at it. So it is a very exciting weekend. And on that note, shall we get
straight into
it?
Yeah, so we're going to run through the Champions Cup. We're going to touch on the Challenge Cup quickly. We are, of course, going to talk about Pro Day Deux, because there are some people listening to this just for the French rugby stuff. We're going to touch on National because at the top of that is Carnage. And then, of course, we are going to finish off with some Pity Fours and some Digestives. But with no further ado, we are going to delve into the Champions Cup. And the way we're going to do it, we're going to kind of combine our review of the last 16 games from last weekend with looking forward to the quarterfinals coming up this weekend, but kind of in like a chronological order. So the first quarterfinal is Bordeaux hosting Quins. And that was actually the first game of the weekend, Quins versus Glasgow. Did you watch it, Rhys?
No, I did not. I was actually out on Friday night. I've watched a couple of highlights. I'm desperately disappointed about this game, I've got to be honest.
I was gutted by the end. You know, I don't technically have any skin in the game there, but I'm not a massive fan of Quins. And my Scottish allegiances did make me want Glasgow to win. I was gutted by the end, but it was an epic. It was a really, really entertaining game. The Quinn scrum was very much on top, but their line out was shambolic, and Glasgow's line out was very much on top. So it's very rare that you kind of get like that. One set piece is one team's dominant, and the other set piece, another team's dominant. We kind of joked last week when we talked about Sam Whitelock that Scott Cummins was the best best maul defender and best mauler in world rugby. And he must have been listening, because he was like, I am. Rob Graham from Rosbys Rugby thinks I'm the best mauler in world rugby. And yeah, he was bashing around like he had a confidence boost of a man that knew he was the best mauler in world rugby.
Well, I think that speaks to two things. And that is, one, your ego. And number two, the fact that the legions of roast beef fans is now extended to serious players who take their inspiration and listen up, players, because you might get some more for this weekend. Take their inspiration from this podcast, where you throw something out there and they want to make sure it comes true. Because, you know, the voice of and the arbiter of world rugby is there telling them, you know, I backed you this week, don't let me down.
But in all seriousness, the way he played, they really got in the heads of Quinns at maul time and at the line out. They were kind of changing their tactics as a result of the fact that Cummins and Jack Dempsey and Matt Ferguson were kind of really and Rory Darge were disrupting them at maul time and line out time, which was fascinating, really, especially for a team like Quinns, who kind of are kind of all about, oh, we back ourselves, you know, this is how we play. Mm. Go on, Rhys.
No, sorry, I was going to say, so A, how do you think the Quinns stood up to the test of that, and how did they adapt, particularly at the line out? And secondly, I suppose maybe this is one just to keep your mind on for the preview, but how do you think that affects them going into the Bordeaux game?
So I think there was two. So they had them at scrum time. Like, Collier definitely had, I was going to try and make a really bad pun there, but the loose head for Glasgow is called Macbeth, not Macbeth. Collier,
key distinction.
It was double trouble. It's Hubble Bubble, isn't it? It's not double trouble. It was double trouble for Macbeth with Collier and then Dylan Lewis. Like, they every scrum was kind of struggling. There was a lot of scope for scrum penalties. Mark Smith was brilliant, and I think the commentators, it's something I noticed. Like, it was Ben Kay and Rory Lawson. They were brilliant at like pointing out all the subtleties of Marcus Smith's game and like why what he was doing was so exceptional. And that's kind of what you want from a commentator, not just Lawrence Dallaglio. Oh, just look at that. You want them to explain why it's good and how they've done it and how that makes, like, sets them apart. Monsieur Trilini was fairly whistle happy.
I caught a little bit of that. That's not out of character.
Yeah, Quinns were great at the breakdown. I think the worry for Quinns, though, on Marcus Smith and Danny Kerr, they have no depth. Like, they played the whole game and they had a 6-2 split. So they didn't bring a back off the bench. And I've seen Green, the reserve scrum half, in the flesh against Leicester, and I can see why they didn't bring him off the bench. Maybe that's their edge he needs.
that's the boost he needs. He'll be an absolute world beater this time next year.
Quinns, I think, just about worthy winners. But it was a great game. Really, really even game. If we just touch on the game that they were qualified on Friday night. They were like, we don't know whether we're going to Bordeaux or we've got Saracens at the Stoop next weekend. The next game was the following afternoon, which was Bordeaux hosting Saracens. And you watched this.
I did watch this. I think the gulf in class was laid horribly bare. I think Saris obviously aren't the team they once were, but Bordeaux were magnificent. I think some of their running lines, ball in hand, I think Saris were caught out a few times. I think that Deportaire first try, where, you know, the sort of lines, the pits they were running with, the balls, the movement, just completely did Saris a few times. And that was Deportaire's first try, which sort of summed up the whole Bordeaux performance. They were quality in the pack. Tamafuna was a bit of a battering ram. He had 12 big carries going forward. They used a lot of their scrum power. Give Saris a bit of a beating, I felt, up front. And then I think that one of the tries of the weekend was that second Deportaire try. The hands, it was some of the slickest movement you will see. You know, you can go into the analysis of how they set it up, but in terms of handling, in terms of how slick they were, it was just one of those things that you watch and you think, wow, that is a backline team at the peak of its powers. And
I genuinely think that Deportaire try, the second one, the first one's also epic. The second one, genuinely, I think might be the best 5 meter tap and go penalty I've seen. Apart from maybe like a Barbarians one where they do like a chip over the back of their head or whatever. But like the hands are just so perfect. And it's forwards as well. It's like Petty was involved. I think one of the other big lumps was like Samu was there, wasn't he? He was the first carrier.
Yeah.
There's a dummy line from your big lump, Jolmez, with his big throw. Like, and then it goes to the backs. And I think just to have that many sets of hands involved who all execute it perfectly and start with forwards running perfect lines as well. It was, I struggled to think, I can't remember a better, you don't see five meter tap and go penalties like that.
No, you don't. And
that's like that's like under 12s, isn't it? Like tap and then we'll just like pass it out because we're good.
You know, it was one of those things where you think it's like, as you say, like under 12s, oh, do you know what? We've got this amazing side and we're just going to try this and it all works out perfectly. Yeah. Everyone's running their line at the right time. Everyone's moving, the hands are perfect. But you know that it's a combination of being extremely well coached, B, natural talent, C, an incredible skill set, because everything was to the metronome as well in terms of the timing of the pass, the angle, the timing of the run. And to do that through forwards and backs from 5 meters, when you can easily just go, right, we'll smash it up. We'll get them to defend narrowly around the racks. Then we'll throw it out a little bit. We're going to score anyway. But just to do it like that, use the
first
combination.
First phase.
Yeah, it was exceptional. And as I don't think I've ever seen. It was actually one of the most exciting moments of the weekend. I watched it and then I rewound it like 4 times. And I was like, wow, this just gets better.
I rewound it because I was like, hang on, I've got to see who was involved in that.
Yeah.
Because half the back line were involved and they were the second half of the move.
Truly stunning. But there was a lot of Tafu's hands for that first Garcia try where he is right on the touchline and it's
the second one. Yeah. Where he's, I don't know how he gets that away.
It's a hell of a fend through sheer power as well, which is a
proper like go away fend, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Get off me.
Again, an under 12s where you've got somebody who's had the growth spurt and is 6 foot and is just like, bang, chucking people away. But how he's got that away, again, testament to an incredible skill set. And the handling was perfect all day. I think it's really difficult when Bordeaux are playing like that to imagine. I mean, Sarri's, as I say, I don't think they're the team they once were. But Pinot, I think he beat 12 defenders, which is not far off a Champions Cup record in of itself, beaten by them a man from Exeter who beat 40 in the weekend. But
yeah,
you've got that level of skill set. You've got that amount of quality players, both up front and in the back line. It's going to be an incredibly tough trip for Harlequins. Do you see any?
I just want to, on this game.
Yeah.
Like, I don't quite know where I stand on it. And I'm not one for regularly defending Saracens. As anyone that supports any team in the Premiership other than Saracens. But I can't quite get my head around this. So there was a lot of crap said before the game. I didn't watch all the build-up. I wasn't watching this game live. And I wanted Bordeaux to win because it gives us more to talk about going towards the next round. And I was like, I just got a feeling Saracens are going to win this. Even when I saw the team and, you know, Farrell's not playing, there was a lot of crap said like, oh, well, Saracens will miss Farrell more than Bordeaux will miss Jalibert. And we teed up, you know, Garcia was a very talented player last week. But Alex Goode has played at 10 so many times for Saracens and been brilliant. And this whole team, like on paper, is still, like, has got some genuinely world-class players in it still. And just to back that up, I think there were 3 or 4 guys in the pack that 2 weeks ago matched up with the France team in the Six Nations. So like Ben Earl was brilliant in that France game. Like Jamie George, Mario Itoje, like Tom Willis came off the bench and he was on the bench and he was starting for this team last year at Bordeaux. So it's like they kind of talk about like the gap and the golf in class, which was evident to see because although it was 10-0 at half time, they had 4 tries chalked off and like 80% territory for the first 20 minutes or something ridiculous like that. What it was actually, and it's the sort of thing, the lame sort of cliche that people that are in sport talk about, and people that haven't actually played elite level sport don't really know anything about. So forgive me for potentially talking crap here. But it seemed to me like it was just one of those things where Bordeaux were on it and Sarri's just, for whatever reason, just weren't at 100%. They weren't quite on it. As soon as the dam broke, it broke. And like their body language was horrific. And their body language wasn't great beforehand. Like walking down that tunnel, which is something like 300, it's not 300 meters. It's a long way by all accounts.
300 meters down.
You start in the market in town.
Yeah. You start with a bottle of wine, you have to make your way down. If you make it to the pitch, you're on. I totally get your point though. But I thought
This isn't a bad Saracens team. Like they hammered Harlequins like 2 weeks ago. I can't get my head around it. I think that's what it is. Like there was clearly a golfing class, like a monumental golfing class, but I just don't know why. Because I can't really see they definitely didn't like match them physically. But I think that's a mindset thing as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. If you look at it, I think to go to your point about sort of looking off the pace, not saying not turning that, but I think, as I said, that first Epatere try, where they, and there's a few times in this game defensively where they're completely caught out of position or they've lost their man or one has come up a little bit too early and they've lost the shape. And Bordeaux, you know, if there's any backline that's going to exploit that, then it's Bordeaux to lose one of those sides. But physically, it's not a weak pack Saracens are packing. I know Bordeaux have got some, you know, we've named them in previous weeks.
Kamepuna is like X factor, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And
but Lamotte, who is fifth choice probably for hooker for France, he was an absolute pest of the breakdown. He was absolutely everywhere. And but you look across and you've got the England captain. So it's kind of like, you know, they're not way off.
No, they're not way off. And that has to be a mindset thing in some ways, because you're playing against an extremely good pack, but you're an extremely good side with a great history and an incredible record. Perhaps not quite as good as you were, but still are a top, top, top European team. And you've looked completely off the pace.
And there was that like last dance element of it as well. Like that should have been like that intangible thing in there. And it just kind of didn't amount to anything. And they were like Makov and Apola looked gutted like towards the end, you know, kind of tearing up maybe. It's quite well documented that he's leaving. I can't see it. If he's trying to get a contract in the top 14,
I'd be surprised.
That's got Montpellier written all over it. Oh, there's a name.
it's got Montpellier.
400K.
400K and a mid-season red card will do you just nicely for Montpellier.
I would say like the crowd as well was epic. The Stade Chalbain Delmas, Rich and I have spoken about quite a lot. But again, Sarri's a lot of those players are used to playing in front of big crowds. So I think that was it either.
No.
I don't know. We've actually had a message from Bill in London saying, "Hi lads, loving the pod. Quick question as a relative newcomer to all things French rugby, ahead of a weekend away to Bordeaux to watch Bordeaux or UBB versus Harlequins. Which Bordeaux players will the Quins coaching staff have to be making plans for in training this week? And are there any names I should be looking out for? Thanks." Well, thank you, Bill. And as a newcomer to French rugby, who would I be picking out? So I'm going to assume Bill has probably seen, if he's coming to this, he's probably watched Six Nations. So he knows Penno, he knows Maxime Lucu, he knows possibly Deportera and Moefana. I think the big one, and the one that that Quins will be wanting to make plans for, and I think they have someone that they can counter that with, is Big Ben. Big Ben Tamifuna, who, to be fair, was in quite a few people's kind of team of the World Cup. He had a couple of outstanding games with Tonga, even though they weren't up to much as a team, unfortunately. And this, I think, is quite key for Quins, is because I imagine Finn Baxter's been playing really well the last couple of weeks, but I reckon they will go with Marler to start because it's up against Big Ben, and they want that parity at the scrum. It's a little known, a little discussed, given the razzle-dazzle in the back line, that the Quins' success in recent times, certainly in the Premiership winning year, has been built on a rock-solid scrum. Collier's great. Marler is still one of the best scrummaging loose heads in the world. And so if they can get parity up front and stop some of the scrum penalties that Big Ben and that Bordeaux pack were able to get, that will certainly help. It will certainly help at maul time as well. Marler still tackles very hard. He's not as mobile as he once was. So I think the plan for counteracting that would be, I imagine they will start Joe Marler. Big Ben has been brilliant, like not just scrum time. He's really putting himself about. He looks quick. He's carrying hard. He's just getting himself involved the whole time. The other one, any views of kind of Bordeaux players that you think Quins will be making plans for? Anyone to look out for Bordeaux that perhaps we kind of touched on Garcia a bit last week, didn't we? And he did us a solid.
Yeah, he did do us a solid. Do you know who I thought played really well? And there's the obvious people that people will know about, Depoter, Luke.
I thought Penno was man. I know Garcia won man of the match, but I thought Penno was unbelievable. He was back to his best.
He really was. And sometimes you wonder what he is up to, you know, running in circles, but then he somehow makes it work. And it's sometimes seems against the laws of sport, physics, science, the way he dances and then suddenly comes away having beaten six defenders. And you're like, but on Saturday, he was back to his best and he was running some incredible lines, incredible hands. I think on the weekend, Anton McQuell in the back row had a really good game. Had a really good game. And I think one to watch for Quins is this really easy sometimes to focus on making plans for some of the really big name stars that Bordeaux have got. But they've also got some extremely good players like McQuell who are really solid at the breakdown, tackle extremely well, make themselves a bit of a nuisance around the fringes. So he was one player that really stood out to me on the weekend beyond some of the more obvious players that you could talk about. And I think that's one thing for the Quins to watch out for, because they've got a quality back row as well, Bordeaux, that can not from, well, we saw in the try with the skill set.
I think ahead of the game, that was actually one of the things that made me think it was going to be closer, because you looked at the names on paper and you had McFarlane, Earl and Vunipola. Yeah. And a kind of, don't know, my initial thought of that Bordeaux back row was a bit underwhelming. Mikel has played a lot. He's not the star name, even when you think of like guys like Gazzotti, who's a kind of the up-and-coming 20-year-old, Boschon, our man, the pub landlord, the 22-year-old pub landlord, has also played. But Samu is, you know, he's an Australian international. Tatafu is a Japanese international and has been brilliant in the last few weeks. So I guess that was kind of me being a bit lazy and not being, sleeping a bit on the Ubebe back row. But yeah, I think you're dead right. It's kind of the, you need those nuts and bolts players, don't you, to sew it all together or do the hard yards. Unseen work.
The unseen hard work that all back rowers like to say they do. Transitioning between what is a really powerful front five and a great back line, great pair of halfbacks, great centers, great winners. You really do, to make any team like that tick, you need a really strong back row who do the nuts and bolts. You don't necessarily have to be star names, but who are there, you know, on someone's shoulder when they're making the run. They're the first to the breakdown. They are there getting over the ball, helping out all around the fringes, tackling hard. And all that seems just nuts and bolts back row work. But to make a team like Bordeaux work, they have to be working as well. So I think that's something to watch out for. Because obviously if Harlequins can get the upper hand at the breakdown in the back row, then
Evans is great at the breakdown. That could be an area that they target, because Bordeaux don't have that fetcher. It's kind of shared across the pack with Big Ben doing a little bit. Lamotte does quite a bit. And Dom Brandt as well. Like, will he, he's going to have to make some hits. He can be good at breakdown. He'd be good at ball in hand, but he's going to have to do some tackling as well, you'd imagine. And there's been question marks at the top level on Dom Brandt of, is he physical enough? And does he have quite the engine enough compared to some of the other world-class back rowers to kind of make it at that top level. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes in this game as well.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a question mark on him, given some of his performances, particularly at the international level and some of the big games where he is. And he's got talent and he's shown a lot of skills and played some great rugby for Quins, but at that really top level against the top sides, whether it be internationally or, you know, Bordeaux are as good as many an international side. And it's going to be a crucial, crucial test for him this weekend.
They're going to need, it's kind of obvious to any Quins fan, but they're going to need him and Esther Hayden to punch some holes, because for all that Bordeaux have that dazzling attack, their defence in the two biggest games I've seen them play recently, so the Saracens game and then Toulouse game a couple of weeks ago, their defence has also been excellent. Saris were going nowhere and Bordeaux's defence was excellent.
Yeah, I think it's something we touched on last week as well, saying that whilst Bordeaux, obviously, naturally the eye turns to Pinot, Deboutaire,
because he's rapid
and the step. It's sometimes slipped the mind that particularly in recent weeks, they have been fantastic defensively, and Harlequin's got a hell of a lot of work to do. And as you say, they're going to have to punch some holes with some of their bigger runners if they're going to have any hope of breaking down Bordeaux, which seems to me very unlikely. So what would you say, Rob? Prediction?
Bordeaux to win, I think. I reckon it'll be 40 points they'll put on them. I reckon it could be a very similar scoreline.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I think it'll be a very similar scoreline. I think Quins are going to give it their all, but fundamentally, they're just too strong across the top, Bordeaux. Quins are going away. It's going to be too much for them. But I have no doubt Bill is going to have a fantastic time in Bordeaux on the weekend.
One more thing. Before we dive into the next set of games, another thing for Bill, because I know he'll be planning his weekend. If he's anything like me, a bit of last-minute planning. Early morning on Saturday, because 4 p.m. kickoff on, I think, local time. Marché du Capucin, which is the kind of more rustic food market in the centre of town. That's a great place. You and I have been there, Reese. I think we had champagne and oysters at 11 o'clock on three hours sleep, which was tough.
The perfect way to get through any hangover.
Or if you're flying into the airport, flying in on Saturday morning, the Marché de Bacalans, which is near the Cité de Vannes, is the kind of nicer, kind of like the timeout market in Lisbon. Either way, both of them, plenty of food and drink options. But I reckon 4 o'clock kickoff, I think gates open probably an hour and a half before, roughly. Get to the ground. Stade Chaban Delmas looks pumping. Lots of reports from last week that the fans were in the seats way, way, way before the game. So sounds like there'll be a good atmosphere before the game. So get to the game, plenty of time. And I imagine afterwards, after a big win over Harlequins, they'll be doing the crowd surfing, rowing thing that we don't know quite how to call it, to a couple of songs that all sound the same. But lots of frivolity to be had after the game, no doubt. Bill, I hope you enjoy Bordeaux. Report back.
Bill.
But we need to move on.
Yeah, let's move on.
You're not allowed to say anything else.
No, that's it. Bye. Let's move on.
Okay, so the next set of games, La Rochelle. La Rochelle won away at Stormers, and that gives them a trip to the Aviva in Dublin after Leinster beat Leicester. There is one game of the last 16, Reese, that I have not seen a single second of. Do you know which one it is?
This is going to surprise people, but it's going to be Leicester-Leinster, isn't it?
It is Leicester-Leinster. As a Leicester fan, that's how committed I am to this podcast, guys. I have turned down watching a single second of my team, just so I could be well informed. I even watched 10 minutes of Bulls versus Leon. Did you catch any of Leinster v Leicester?
Only a little bit, I must admit. I thought actually it was a really good start for Leicester. Leinster just looked a little bit off the pace early on, but obviously they got just briefly. But they had from what I saw, obviously Jameson Gibson-Park was fantastic. Obviously, he's gone from being Leinster's backup scrum half to now one of the best in the world. I thought Leinster, I was looking at them and yes, they're looking incredible defensively for the most part, but I feel they've lost a little bit going forward in attack. Aren't quite as sharp as they once were perhaps last year. Maybe I'm being unfair on them. After our stunning analysis of that Leinster-Leinster game.
In depth. in depth.
But guys,
I've got my views are going to come when we preview their game.
Yeah, exactly. And you come for the French angle as well. So,
and this game I mean, we are Rus Beefs. We are UK based, but we definitely have a love of French rugby. For the French rugby lover, this game was just poetic, wasn't it, Reese? The ending to this game was just glorious. Absolutely glorious.
But every single...
Couldn't have happened better.
Do you know what,
I couldn't have written it. We were texting at the time, and I was like, I've just seen Lebok miss a last-minute kick. Poetic.
Do you know what? It's a real tragedy, and I had to... Thankfully, I bought some new handkerchiefs and M&S on Saturday morning, so I had to go through a pack of those. It was really poetic, and for every team that has suffered that last couple of minutes box drop goal or that penalty they've bought 40 metres out and slotted, I think, you know, you could have been anywhere in the world and it's somebody who identified with Limerick pushing one wide, which, by the way, when we were messaging, when he's lining up, it looks like he's lining about 40 foot left of the post. And, you know, I'm not saying lo and behold, that's where it went.
So just a bit of context for people that might not be fully across what the history is here. So in the group stage game, La Rochelle went to Cape Town, played the Stormers. They were completely dominant. And in the last minute, Stormers scored a try in the corner. Manny Lebok, having been dropped from the South Africa team during the World Cup because his goal kicking wasn't good enough, then slotted the touchline conversion for a completely unmerited victory over La Rochelle. And it put La Rochelle kind of staring down the barrel of exit after winning the tournament 2 years in a row. They then kind of rallied with some thumping wins in the last couple of rounds. But it did give us the kind of rematch in the last 16 of, again, La Rochelle going to Stormers for that away game. And in the last minute, a beautiful crossfield kick, it has to be said, from Manny Lebok, finds Hartzenberg, and Bob Skinstat by this stage was fully in partisan mode, kind of saying, why didn't you go closer to the posts?
He really was. He's got three men descending on him.
Oh, that's a penalty. How's that not a penalty? But yeah, and then Manny Lebok missed the conversion this time too, which would have won them the game. It's brilliant. But justice, I think. Justice. And I think more than just kind of an anti-South African and pro-French narrative, I think there is kind of an element, and it's an issue in this guise of the tournament. There is still that thing of, like, it just feels better for the tournament for La Rochelle to be in it and Stormers not to be in it. Like, I think a lot of neutrals wanted South African teams in there, but I don't know. I think you want the two-time champs going up against a team that they've beaten in the last two finals as well in the next round. I think this competition for me is all about, like, heritage and the history of, like, certain clashes. And this is a clash coming up next weekend, which is dripping with that. So I was fully supporting La Rochelle in this one.
Yeah, I think there's definitely been that thing as well where this happened when the South African teams came to the URC, and they still, and no doubt they've raised the standards, where there is that thing about how they fit into the heritage of clubs that have played each other for many years, who have got long rivalries. You know, La Rochelle Leinster's, as you say, one dripping in heritage, you know, the last two finals. So much to talk about, but even some of the other great fixtures that we've seen over the last 10, 15, 20 years, where does that fit? Perhaps as time goes on and you start to get these rivalries that build and some mouth-watering clashes, because to take nothing away from the Stormers, they put on what I thought was considering the injury problems they had, the key players missing the front five, I thought there were some absolute standout players for the Stormers.
They also had four injuries in the game, didn't they?
Yes.
So three went off injured. There was three HIAs for one for Diamante, who people love, people rave about. Morat, the captain, had an HIA. And there was another one in there somewhere, but I can't remember who that was. But they were all pretty as one of the other back rowers, because Diamanti came on for one of the other back rowers, didn't he? But they were great first half. They were really good first half. Valencia was brilliant.
Valencia,
step and offload. Wow. For the try. I enjoyed Manny Lebot as Morat, the kind of big lumbering second row, is trudging towards the line. You've got Manny Lebot next to him just shouting, pass the ball, and pointing at Herschel Yankees.
Manny Lebot, I thought he was really good. His distribution was excellent. They really...
Yeah,
and Valencia was fantastic. And I thought they type 5 put in a big shift. You know,
but it just came to them, didn't it?
It just came to them.
It
was one of those things where you were like, oh, the Stormers might sneak this. It's a good first half performance. Tight five play well. They're doing all they can. They're keeping La Rochelle at bay. La Rochelle conceded 13 turnovers. And you're like, this is a quality performance considering the players that La Rochelle have got, particularly that pack. But they just couldn't hold off time in the end. You know, Will Skelton was fantastic.
Aldrich was brilliant. Both sides of the ball.
12 or 13 carries, 13 tackles. He was outstanding. So his physicality was essential to that turnaround, where they really broke them down in the key areas, whether it be, you know, the Stormers scrum stayed pretty strong towards the end. But at the breakdown in the mall, carrying Skelton was excellent and showed some truly outstanding sportsmanship as well to protect.
He was also like breaking up fights. It was brilliant. That was lovely to see. He had kind of a protective role all game.
Yeah.
I just cut you off there.
No, it was just, I can't remember who it was. It was just who was injured.
I think it was Morat.
Yeah, and he's just protecting him.
Being clocked by Will Skelton's knee, which I imagine does knock a man out.
Yeah, which is not exactly what you want smacking you in the face during a nice Saturday afternoon in South Africa. But I thought he was fantastic. And I thought La Rochelle, I've got to say, this is taking nothing away from them, because particularly the second half, and it was an extremely physical display, and they broke down what was some great resistance by the Stormers. Thought a couple of times they got the rub of the green, a couple of decisions at the breakdown. And nothing I don't think that would have changed the outcome of the game. But a couple of times you felt the penalty could have gone the other way.
I think the back rower that came on, I've got it written down somewhere, Tiernason or something like that.
Yeah.
That was borderline.
Yeah.
But then the yellow for Dylan Lades was completely spot on. And to not give a penalty try there was also completely spot on, because La Rochelle had scrambled really well to get lots of players back there. I think on Matt, so Matt Carley, much like Mr. Trinini, is very whistle happy. And I actually think the end of that game, he dealt with, like, that is where Matt Carley kind of comes into his own, because it was that he had a couple of minutes camped on the La Rochelle line, scrum resets, all that stuff. And he was just stop the clock, no nonsense, clear instructions to both teams. He doesn't speak any French. We've seen that before, but thankfully he didn't need to. For La Rochelle have enough English speakers in that pack for that to be okay. But it was just, he was just on top of it. He was in control. He wasn't going to take any shit. And that, it meant the Stormers had the chance to win the game. Like, that clock could have easily wound down and he could have let something happen, and then clock goes. And I thought he dealt with it really well. He had a pretty good game generally. I'll credit where credit's due.
I thought he handled it overall pretty well. I just felt these are always open to interpretation and the decisions. I don't think there was any howlers. I just think on a different day, different ref, you might have got a few different decisions. But I don't think you could argue with the overall result. I think particularly in the second half, as we've said, the Stormers played well. They had some standout players. But in the end, La Rochelle just had a bit too much in their power game. There was a little bit of justice at the end for the La Rochelle and the neutral.
And just on the moving on to the kind of, or looking ahead. So the La Rochelle power came through eventually, and it, for as long as Stormers tried to hold off, it caught up with them at the end. Now, the narrative of the last two finals and the semi-final before that in 2021, La Rochelle's power has come through in the end against Leinster. Certainly last year and the year before in the finals, both quite big comebacks. La Rochelle came from 16 points down against the Stormers. I think it was pretty similar in the final last year against Leinster.
Leinster took some key players off towards the end. You might have slept on.
I don't know if this kind of this version of La Rochelle is quite that powerful. They're all just a little, they're all at 90% rather than being at 100%. In those previous finals, they've been roaring. And maybe this weekend was kind of a nice tune-up for them. However, they then have to fly back from South Africa and get to Cork, which is where they're training this week. That's not going to help you get up to 100% and tune you up nicely, is it?
As you say, then they've got to travel back over to Ireland, even though the Roland Garros mind games are started, by playing the Leinster songs on the team bus, etc. But
are we going to get more opportunities of fucking alarm?
Apparently, there was a lot of that at the team talk at halftime. I read afterwards that he gave one of his famous.
What would you do next week? The cards. Vacance, prochance, amen.
He's a real wordsmith in the cross between English and French. Which is what must get them going. But as you say, that final, sometimes it's that culmination of the season. It's that huge game. You're firing on all cylinders. It's a tough week for them. They've had some, you know, they haven't had an easy run of games in the top 14. And Leinster always going to be a powerful side, a powerful pack to break down. So this is going to be an incredibly tight one.
I don't know whether it's like that thing of, are Leinster bottlers in knockout games? They haven't won a tournament in the last 3 years, I think, including the URC. Yeah. Is this kind of early enough for them to not bottle, almost like quarterfinals? Yeah, oh, we can get through one of them.
Well, you say that, Rob, but Ireland rugby has never managed in the Rugby World Cup to get past that quarterfinal stage.
Very, very true.
Perhaps it's that curse, maybe, of the quarterfinal might hurt them this time. But you might
Go on.
You go.
I was going to say, the key thing, as a Leicester fan, thinking about last weekend and looking ahead to this weekend, Leicester didn't have Tommy Raphael, Ollie Chesson, George Martin. So you've got two big, big lumps and a fetcher. La Rochelle will be going into this game with Bottier, who is Raphael levels of breakdown work. They'll be going into it with Skelton, who is George Martin plus when it comes to being physical. They've got, they don't quite have, you know, Sazzy anymore, but so Elton Delan, Chesham's probably a bit more physical than that, but you've got an international level second row alongside him as well. So you've kind of, the three key players that Leicester didn't have, La Rochelle have people that fit that role who can make a big difference in a game against Leinster. Like, they can stop Leinster getting the quick ball by making a mess of the breakdown much better than Leicester can. They can get over the game lines and big physical carriers much better than Leicester can, because they've just got more of them. And you've got Skelton and Antonio, who are better ball carriers than, you know, as much as I love him, Dan Cole and Kyle Hatherall in the second row, or Harry Wells. Like, there's just more carriers in that pack, which could really be the difference and beat up, you know, we've talked about the relentlessness of La Rochelle's forward pack coming to get you. That could happen. Again,
it could. I think, yeah, it's a more difficult prospect against Leinster for La Rochelle, but yeah, I'm just really torn on this.
There's one player that we've not mentioned that I really, really want to mention, because I just love watching him play, and it's interesting him coming up against Jamison Gibson Park. But Tawara Kerbalo, I love watching him play. He's just a complete nine. And it makes you realise just how good that New Zealand team was, that he was third choice
Yeah.
Behind Smith and Perenara in 2015. And he is phenomenal. Like, his passing is so quick, so crisp. He's the first at every breakdown. Like, he's so fit. He makes so many cover tackles, and he's physical enough that he can bundle people into touch when he's making those cover tackles. You know, it's like two paths, two different parallel universes, isn't it? Like, the guy that had a few of the raw materials and chose to go and be a mercenary in Ireland to get his international caps, and the guy who was kind of humble to his roots, proud of his Maori roots, and stayed in New Zealand, and ultimately, even though he was third choice, didn't win as many caps, ultimately won himself a World Cup in one of the great modern rugby teams. So it's kind of a nice parallel universe there.
It's a really nice
two
parallel.
Sides of it.
Yeah,
sliding doors.
Yeah, well, it's always the option if you're a great Southern Hemisphere player and you can't quite make it, you know, you're probably third, fourth choice. You can always just go grab a load of caps for Ireland, or indeed Italy, or maybe even England.
I reckon Leinster have got to be scouring Super Rugby as we speak.
Oh, Ireland are as well.
For a fly half.
So, yeah, but that would be a fascinating matchup.
Because Leinster, they're not getting Crowley. As much as they want to redistribute the wealth all to Leinster, I don't think they can convince Munster to get rid of Crowley. They've got Snyman. I think Crowley might be a different prospect.
But that is one area where Leinster, I think that Jameson Gibson-Park is a great scrum half, but I think that 10 position with Byrne is where they're lacking somewhat. They're really missing it.
Hastoy has gone off the boil so much.
Yeah, and this is where you're probably looking at two really quality nines who are playing extremely well versus two tens.
Just not quite
who
at their best.
Who are not quite at their best. Who quality players, but aren't quite their best. Can't quite get things going as they have over
bit
the last...
fragile mentally as well, both of them. There's a little bit of doubt as to have they got the minerals.
Yeah, and particularly, it goes back to sort of that point about I don't think Leinster, maybe that's part of the reason why they don't look as crisp at the moment, because Byrne is off the pace. But obviously, they're missing Ring Rose. But I think this...
Where's your money going?
I'm going to say Leinster by five.
I think I agree with that entirely, which doesn't make for great podcast.
No, and I think that Leinster back row is really going to turn up. Leinster have got an outstanding back row, a serious back row that'll have to turn up big time against La Rochelle, and I think they will. And I think at home, they will just have enough in the tank. It's one of those games that generally could even weigh, but money with the mouth is Leinster by five.
Next game is going to be Saints hosting Bulls, which is an interesting matchup because Bulls Leon was a completely one-sided. As we predicted, Leon did send the Shags. They've got bigger things to worry about in the top 14. They are 12th. They've got a great home record, but even in the and they've got a great pack, but they didn't send any of those players and they were away from home. Bulls, a physical team with some quick backs. That's kind of all I know about them, to be honest. I don't watch the URC. I've not been that enamoured with watching them in the Champions Cup this season. Saints I know quite a bit about because I watched the Premiership, and that Munster game was epic. That was so thrilling, so high tempo, high ball in play. I think Munster are one of the... They've not actually kind of quite as successful in the Champions Cup as people think. You know, they've won it twice, but they're so embedded in the history of this tournament. They're just always there. They embody, I think they embodied the tournament, like that kind of the crowd, the travelling fans, the fortress home stadium, and just pulling big performances out when they really need it. And I thought they were going to do it. Tyke Byrne is an absolute phenomenon. Oh. But my God, the tempo that Saints played with.
The Bulls, just to touch on them for a quick second, it's difficult to sort of tell a lot because we know the Bulls are a good side. They play really well in the URC and they've played well this season. But it's difficult to sort of extrapolate too much from the Lyon where they've sent the Shags and got an absolute pasting. But
at altitude.
But they're still going to be a stern test for the Saints with the quality of player they've got and the experience they've got.
I think I'm intrigued to see. It's an interesting matchup because Saints have improved significantly physicality wise and defensively. Like, that's the big thing that people are talking about this year with them. I think the big element of this is the travel. I think this is where it comes to it, because they've got to come over from South Africa. Okay, Saints have a 6-day turnaround. Bulls have had a full week. But given that what Saints did was run Munster off their feet, and yes, a slightly ill Munster team maybe, but they ran them off their feet with the pace, with the tempo, high ball in play time. Can they live with that off the back of what is going to be a relatively down week in terms of training? How will Bulls match up when it comes to game day? I personally think Northampton's tempo wins in this game. And just if they can keep that tempo up and get over the gain line enough and be physical enough.
That is probably one thing that it makes it tricky for them, is the travel, because just to turn around, even though they probably didn't get a harder run out as they probably should have on the weekend, it's a long way to go. I'm going to go against the grain here. I'm going to say Bulls win.
Bulls physicality. And Bulls, they match them for the pace, yeah.
I think they can
I can see it happening.
I think they can match them for pace. I think they can match them tempo again, but I'm going to go Bulls. I think Bulls by 7.
Okay. And we will preview and review the next set of games, which is Involves to Lose, after this interlude, which may even be an LA to Lose song, if you're lucky. I feel like we've been a bit serious so far. I want to pick up something just before we move on to the to Lose Chiefs game, about the Saints game. And that is the remarkable likeness of Mike Adamson to everyone's favourite politician, Matt Hancock.
Oh, God. I've never thought of that. Oh, my word.
Anyway, the final game of the weekend will be to lose the Chiefs. So Chiefs versus Bath was an interesting game. If you didn't see it, Sandy Park is renowned for being windy. I watched a lot of Exeter games, both at Sandy Park and on TV. I don't think I've ever seen it quite as windy as it was on Saturday. The wind affected all games. Remarkably, the wind affected the game in South Africa as well, the Stormers game. But the Chiefs game was so windy, and Bath decided to not get to grips with the wind and kept trying to kick into it. And Chiefs just played it better. They were kind of happy to keep ball in hand, wind into, wind behind, but mainly wind into. They were happy to run through the phases, kind of, and that worked for them. And Bath kind of, the injuries hampered them. So Finn Russell went off after about 16 minutes, I think. Cam Redpath went off in the second half, which meant that you had to shift Orlando Bailey out to 12, not his natural position. Ben Spence had to play 10, which isn't ideal. Another classic example of a 6-2 split not working. And Chiefs were just, and they also completely outsmarted them on the pitch, which is remarkable for a team that is that callow. Few key highlights in this. A comedy knock-on from Alfie Barbary off a kickoff. It went 15 metres straight into the arms of Ross Vincent off kickoff, and Ross Vincent just flew in.
The best next Sergio Parise.
The best bit of the game was better than Ross Vincent. Ten Hill catching one time in the first half when they're playing into the wind where the box kick worked for Bath. Ten Hill caught it and ran it in from 50 metres, and he pulled away from Manny Faye-Wiboso and Josh Hodge, who are basically two of the quickest players in the Premiership. Ted Hill was in streak away, but he had enough acceleration to get away and held that distance away from them, which is, it was amazing. I was laughing. It was brilliant. But this game was kind of really about, well, the wind, but it was about Faye-Wiboso. He was, the only contribution we've had from Richard Cronin this week is that he broke a record in a knockout game for defenders beaten. When you consider how good Penno was against Saracens the weekend, being 11 defenders or 12 defenders, to beat 14, Faye-Wiboso was incredible. he was powerful. He got himself involved all game, like kind of like Mark Talea was in the World Cup, just always coming off his wing, always getting involved. You don't expect a winger who's that young to be your main kind of momentum giver. Like, there were certain instances where he would kind of be on a short line or pick and go type thing where he is making that bust. And then off the back of that, that's given them the momentum, you know, only making a yard or two, but it gives momentum to Roots, to Chunza, to Jenkins, to Fizilau, like piggybacking off your winger, which is mental. But he was phenomenal. And you could see the lift that his performance gave to those players. And I mean, we'll go on to the Toulouse team in a minute, but there is something really special about this iteration of Chiefs. And I think this game, also, as much as Bath didn't quite play it right, it was also a lot about Exeter playing it right and that embodiment of just playing a bit of smarter rugby, and that embodies kind of Rob Baxter and Ali Heifer and how they go about their rugby, or how they've always kind of gone about their rugby. There is something special there. They've got some great players. We'll come on to how they might get an away win, but it's going to be a hell of a task because, well, I don't think anyone has seen the last 15 minutes of the Toulouse v Racing game.
Someone pulled the plug. Probably a Racing fan somewhere in Paris.
Some Canal Plus players, subscribers in France have definitely seen it. But Toulouse team going into it, I think it was, I looked at it on paper and it was flawless. Like, I just couldn't see a weakness. And the one thing that is great about Chiefs, all those youngsters, the one youngster that doesn't impress me again and again is Harvey Skinner. And I think Ramos could be back fit, we don't know. There's every chance that Toulouse could have in their match day 23 five players who are genuinely better options at fly half than Harvey Skinner.
Yeah.
If you think DuPont, Entomac, Ramos, Kinghorn, Malia would all do a much better job as a starting 10, but it just shows their depth. They didn't even need, I mean, Kinghorn's goal kicking took a bit of time to get going. He was quite good at kicking in the game we watched. He actually kicked really well that day. He is a very much like, one day could be 100, one day could be 50, like Bowden Barrett. Like, you could look at him sometimes and think, this guy's never missing a kick. Or you could be like, oh my God, how is this guy first choice kicker?
Yeah, why is one guy had 10 pints of 10 and suddenly having a few pops at the ports?
Yeah.
That said, man, with this Toulouse side, you particularly at the Isabella on, you aren't...
Why bother? You don't need a goal kicker.
You don't really need one because you're probably never going to be in a situation, very rarely in a situation where you're going to go, oh, we're going to need that penalty in the 78th minute to squeeze us through.
I think this was just such a horrific matchup for Racing. Like, I've talked about it on the preview during the week or on last week's podcast, but Racing just aren't, for a French team, they aren't very physical.
No, and...
And it really showed. They just couldn't get anywhere, really. Jordan Joseph is a physical player, but he's clearly not in the best conditioning because he has had so many injuries and lost a bit of form. And presumably, still a young man, lost a bit of confidence. And they needed him. They were so reliant on him to try and give them something. And they were just... Toulouse's defence was great.
I tell you what it really showed for me is you particularly saw in the third and fourth try where...
Did we see those?
We saw those.
I don't think we saw the fourth one, did we?
No, I've seen it on highlights. I'm not sure if we saw the fourth.
Oh,
no,
right.
No, we might not have because...
Mackie was the fourth one, wasn't he? I have seen that on the highlights. I saw him literally run over the line. That's all I've seen for that try.
Because somebody in the Laurent Desmond has just ripped out the cables for BT. But... Where they lack physicality, I thought it was quite noticeable, particularly around the breakdown, particularly as it got close to their own line, they'd get very narrow, which really exposed them to somebody like, you know, DuPont, who's got an extremely crisp delivery on him, where Toulouse run really great lines, where they just bunched him because if they lack a bit of that power, Toulouse have got a big pack. And then it just exposed them for that third try, one pass, running a great line, try.
Yeah.
For the Aki try, a couple come out, but they are men-like because they just simply do not have the power or the physicality around that breakdown area. So they're having to defend really narrow when it comes close to their own line. And then they just, it's not even a case of chucking out wide. They're exposed even from one pass, one line being run, which, you know, if you're going to beat Toulouse, you can't do it. It just exposed the weaknesses of that Racing team, particularly, I think, in their terms of their physicality and in terms of, you know, particularly around the tackle area that they had.
The I mean, there aren't that many teams that wouldn't get narrowed up by
that pack.
But I think the thing about that as well, that Lebel try showed the value of like having playmakers just in your outside backs, because I think it was Kinghorn to Malia and then onto Lebel, or other way around, Kinghorn Malia. But you've got two playmakers there in your outside backs that they, you've seen people cock those up, like cock up that
100%.
And it was no like, I'm going to try and have a run here. It was, no, I'm just going to fix the man. And just like, it looked like kind of a fly half in the outside channel. Like, that's kind of what you get. Alexandre Rumat was, that's the best I've seen him play, I think. He was brilliant.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And you were talking earlier about the Bordeaux back row being nuts and bolts and doing what they need to do to give the opportunity to the kind of flair players. No, like this back row for Toulouse just completely sums that up. Willis and Cross and Rumat. Rumat was a bit more showy, but Cross and Willis just are just so good and so consistent at tackling, clearing out rucks, doing the little short carries when they just need someone to give them get the ball away to someone. Line out work, tackling, breakdown. They just do everything all the time. And I think they're so key to giving Toulouse the ball that they need, and that as much as Miafu and Malvaca and getting over the gain line does as well, without those guys, they've got the two of the best flankers in Europe.
100%.
If not two best for me. Cross has been sensational this calendar year.
Yeah, it also.
And I love Willis.
Yeah, you're a big fan of Willis. I on the way to the Toulouse Stadium, and the Urns fell on a couple of weeks back, I had for the Bullies a Beautiful Walk, I had Rob talk about Willis for a good 45 minutes.
Talking about how good he was at clearing rucks.
Yeah. Also, they set up, and this is obviously a very deliberate thing, but they set up field position really well as well. They do those short carries, keep them going forward, then they set up a move and bang, before you know it, they've scored. And that stuff is just what, as we said with Bordeaux, is just really what makes it all tick.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to look at a great try and say, wow, how great was Tony D, because we all love him, how great was Entermac. But that is the glue that sticks everything together and that makes them as good as they are. I mean, Willis, I didn't used to like him. I don't really know why, because he's always been class, but he's really grown on me. It's just such a quality back row. The one thing I suppose for Exeter is their ball was a bit slower than usual to lose.
Yeah.
On the weekend, I think 43% of their ball was under 3 seconds cleared from a ruck, which even compared to Racing was about 60%. I think the weekend average was around 60%. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so I think their ball was... I think that is obviously covered a lot by their extreme strengths in the back line. But the ball was probably a little bit slower than they're used to for Toulouse. A little bit slower than you probably expect. Perhaps something Exeter can try and exploit as one perhaps opening. It's not often you see many weaknesses, and I wouldn't say this is an ongoing weakness, but perhaps it's something that Exeter can look to this weekend as a glimmer of where they might want to try and attack for Toulouse, to try and slow that ball down in any way they can, versus, you know, particularly once Toulouse get going, they start to get points on the board, the dam can break really quickly, so perhaps that's an area they might want to target. But easier said than done, rather them than me.
I'm sure this line will be trotted out many a time this week, but this could be men against boys. Like, as much like, there is something special about this Chiefs team, and they will have to find some reserves of that specialness. I don't want to fully write them off, but it's I just think the physicality of Toulouse is going to come too hard for them. And I think last week was actually them just being a bit rusty. Like they just knew, I think they knew they had enough in the tank to beat Racing, and Racing were never really going to trouble them. So they've never really got out of third gear. Could be an early scare, maybe Chiefs start well, but there's every chance that ultimately Toulouse just completely run away with this. You know, we said Bordeaux Quins could be a kind of 40 something teens scoreline. I think this is going to be, it's hard to see something significantly different in this game.
100%. You know how much I love Sam Warburton, and he was trying his very best to sort of find a little glimmer of hope from the Chiefs. He was like, you know, Toulouse have lost this year a few times. I was thinking, sorry, Sam, as much as I love you, but I would put my mortgage, or I should say my girlfriend's mortgage, on the fact that to lose a romp in this. This is simply just too much for them at this point in time. Where Toulouse are, where they are, you can easily see it being 30 plus Toulouse's way.
And while there might not be much to be enjoyed for Chiefs fans travelling to Toulouse this weekend, on the Sunday, if they are flying out on the Friday morning, they could go to Argennes, which is not what we did. Argennes versus Angoulême. So Argennes about an hour on the train from Toulouse. Or they could do what we did and go to Montauban. Montauban are at home to Nevers, a must-win game for Montauban.
Yes.
Two good, entertaining Pro Day de T games there. Angoulême and Montauban both scrapping for their lives in the relegation battle.
We've just got to go through the challenge cap. Me and Rob last week, if you were listening in, talked about which French team might turn up, which might not. We were proved right.
Relatively spot on in terms of the turned upness.
We did. I think there was, just to go through some of the fixtures quickly, there was a great win for the Ospreys. The Bridgend Ospreys. Leith is going to be kicked out of that fairly soon. As the Ospreys are trying out new ground, so they got to Bridgend. It was a really good performance, great scrum.
Why did they not? Well, let's not go into that.
Don't bait me, because this broadcast will turn into 2 hours as we turn into drama. But quality performance for them. They are going to play Gloucester, who will come on to in a sec. But just round up some of the other games. Benton, which we said handily beat the Lions. Then we had the Sharks absolutely tore Zebra apart, which was completely unsurprising as well. So we'll go on to some of the French teams. And I think you said we probably got it nigh on not too bad. Cast probably the ones that sort of surprised a little bit.
They did send a weakened team.
They did, but they did pretty turn much. up.
Well, it wasn't first choice. They did turn up. Podcast favourite, Josea Rysouk, him of Simba ref lifting fame, did start on the wing for Cast, which is a rare outing. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about how Richard equals Cast and Cast equals Richard. And I realised another similarity this week, in that sometimes when away in Europe, sometimes Richard or Cast just don't feel like being there. They get maybe a little bit homesick and they're there in body, but not in spirit. Or they're there and they would really just like to be at home, enjoying some home comforts. And that is Richard on the odd random trip to Europe. And it's also Cast in Europe, largely.
It's very, All they're thinking is the 6:40 p.m. back to Stansted. How quickly they can nip on the Stansted Express and get home. That is, they're just not feeling it. Look, they want the home comforts. They want to watch repeats.
They've had a bit of fun, and now they just want to go home.
Yeah. Talking of absolutely joke performances, which is something we touched on last week, and I probably didn't hide my sort of distaste or not a great deal of love for Montpellier, who were down to 12 God. Men for 10 minutes at one point in the second half. Well, let me see, with the absurd red card.
Oh, Valencia's got another red card. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. We said they weren't going to turn up, but they didn't.
We said they were going to send a 1.5 team, which I think they kind of did, really. But I also said that they might still win, which I got very, very wrong. Well, Ulster are pride in Europe, and they sent a full noise team, and they're on the way back up after a pretty torrid season.
Also, not your fault that Montpellier got one red card and three yellow cards in the space of about 20 minutes. Which sort of for me sums up most of their season or the headlessness. Yeah. What's happening 1 minute is totally different than what's happening the next. But Clermont managed to, which I think is an important win for them after only winning one in the last six in the top 14. They left it really, it's really tight towards the end, 27-22. But I think it's an important win for them. Any sort of reflections or what you think, what it means for them?
I think, Clermont v Ulster on Saturday afternoon, I've already seen some hype on social media on the Clermont accounts. 10 years ago, that's an epic kind of
classic
Cup semi-final or something, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I think of the runners and riders, I'm unchanged on where I was last week, and I think Gloucester or the Sharks are the team winning that. It's just whether the Sharks can be bothered to kick into gear. As they did kick into gear last week. I still think the winner comes from those two games. Ospreys do have an outside chance against Gloucester, but I think Gloucester are really keen on this tournament. Edinburgh, they've got to go to South Africa. That doesn't help. But I still think Ulster, maybe if they're on the way back up. But yeah, I think I'm not moved. I don't fancy
Benetton. No jokers though. They're not.
But I think when it comes to it, semis and final, then they're not winning it.
No, I agree. I think, Poe sort of a bit unlucky, but at the end, they got a sin bin right at the wrong time. But there's a few good fixtures to look forward to next week. I think Gloucester Ospreys will be good. Clermont Ulster should be a really good one, as you say. It's sort of one of those two sort of faded giants of yesteryear, sort of fighting their way back. So there's some really good matches there to watch next week. And I think probably that sort of covers the Challenge Cup.
Challenge Cup done. I think French teams will turn up. The one French team that is left will try and turn up in this game.
Yeah, I think
that's our conclusion.
Here comes Nostradamus with another classic of the genre. So, on to what everybody's been waiting for. It's certainly the bit that I've hung in here for the last little bit of time for, and why I've turned up for the last couple of weeks is Pro Day 2. Rob, another big weekend. What caught your eye? There were some fantastic games. What got it for you?
The game that really caught my eye, Rhys, was the Thursday night game, which we previewed as being a pretty tasty one to look forward to. Dax versus Brive. 27-10 to Dax, which puts them in fourth.
Yeah, wasn't expecting this.
Four tries to one. And I'll tell you why this excites me. So as much as Brive are the team that we kind of think might come through, my man, I called him out a few weeks ago when we did our intro to Predator, Jope Nocera, two tries and an assist. He was phenomenal. One of them was a kind of rubber through and he's just gassed it. There aren't that many people quick enough. One, he's got outside on the outside of the second row and just fully bumped the fullback. And then the other one was kind of classic winger off your wing, off an inside ball. Like, just brilliant. Like, loved it. Loved watching him play. I'm thinking either someone else sign him up or let's get Dax into top 14 so we see more of him, because he's phenomenal.
Yeah, I saw the tries, and I mean, I've kept an eye out for him since you said, since I, you know, heard it then as a mere listener of the podcast. And as much as I hate to credit you, he was phenomenal. It was, and it's a really big win for Dax. They've got a huge game next week. They go to Van.
Yeah.
Which is a mouthwater. I tell you, which is a game that, two games that really got me going a little bit, which one really unexpected. I didn't think Ron Normandy would win. Zia didn't help himself with a red in the 21st. But
yeah, this, and the highlights for this are useless because you don't see what the red is for. No. You see Tim Nanai Williams just kind of running in basically sideways with his arms by his side, the shoulder charge to get a yellow. And then in the next minute, there's a red card. I think it was just a high shot based on the conversation. But at that point, they're down to 13 men. It doesn't actually cost them in that moment that much. But I think it would have done eventually.
60-meter drop goal as well.
Gaban Law, yeah. I thought this guy was just an absolute flyer. But turns out he could knock him over from 60 as well, which is pretty useful to be quick and... I mean, it was windy everywhere. I'm going to assume that was downwind.
Ye have little faith, my friend.
Well, I've seen. But it gives Rouen an outside chance of staying up because they aren't, well, staying up both in the access match because they're now only 2 points behind Montauban. So if they can get into the access match, that's kind of in their own destiny to an extent. But they're only 7 points behind Saxe-Vie. So there's still just about enough time for them to catch up on Saxe-Vie if they keep this run of form going. And actually, I kind of commented on something on Instagram that surely Rouen aren't going to win at home. And I was called out. Rouen have won four in a row at home. You know, they're a good team at home. And I was like, yeah, but Béziers are a different proposition. And I was wrong, you know. Sebastian Tillisbord and his men getting a bit of good form at home, which could keep them up. They're picking up wins. They've been pretty good this calendar year.
Yeah. And I mean, they haven't got as bad a running as Montauban have, who we mentioned last week, of a terrible horrific running. They're the versus home this week, which is a must win for them. Saxe-Vie have got a Gen away, my boys, which will be a tough game. They can't see them winning that. So it's a really... Ron put themselves in a position where when it looked like maybe 2-3 weeks ago they were down and out, you're thinking, they're sick, they're just down.
Well, because it was their home games were against Béziers and then this week Provence. And as a... like looking from a distance, that they should struggle in those. But Provence haven't been great against the lower teams when going away. So they could pick up another one Friday night if they continue this home form. The other game, well, we touched on it there, Saxe-Vie were at home to another high-flying team, Van. That was a good game. And actually, it was Van that ended up kicking it off the field. They were kind of happy with the two points, which I think is kind of quite mad.
It says a lot, though, for people who are joining who probably don't watch a lot of French rugby or get into it or how wild, particularly Pro D2, is that for Van, who, if you look at the table in any other league and you're thinking, wow, they should be smashing it for the win, that is how important points are away from home, regardless of where they sit in the table, where you sit in the table. You know, to think that Van, who are, you know, pushing for that first spot and they are, Saxe-Vie are 14th, you know, they're happy taking those draw points. I think another one this week, which was a really good win, and I'm going to have to tell you my moment of the week in a second, but Grenoble, Sam Davis, World Rugby Junior Player of the Year 2013, never quite got to those heights, but put in an incredibly assured performance for another good
win. Do you know what? The game, when we went to, Rich and a couple of others went to Grenoble in November, he was absolutely, I think he's been injured recently because he hasn't played and he was on the bench last week. I think he had an injury for a while. He was absolutely class in that game in November. Like, looked just a class above everyone else, just controlling the game, crossfield kicks, his goal kicking this game, three penalties were longer than 40 metres. He then, 2 minutes to go, has that 40 metre drop goal. Just,
he's,
I mean,
He's such a quality player.
He's very Cammy Lopez-esque.
It's never quite happened for him to the extent that when he burst onto the scene. I mean, he said to himself that perhaps he went
was
too
he
much.
Ospreys? He was Ospreys, wasn't he?
Yeah, and then he moved to the Dragons. And he freely admits it never quite happened for them the way it should have. You know, he's still got, I think, 12, 13 Welsh starts, maybe a few more, maybe a few less. But he admits that perhaps he went out a little bit too much, perhaps didn't give the best impression. But there is genuinely a lot of talent there. And is doing the business for Grenoble, did it for them on the weekend, which was a really important game for them. And look, if they hadn't those 8 points taken away, look where they'd be now. But
they're their first loss at home this season.
Yeah, which is a big thing. Like it's not a...
And it means that Grenoble, even with the points deduction, are now only 3 points behind Nevers in sixth.
Yeah,
so Grenoble, I reckon they've got an outside chance because they've got quality there. They're clearly a better team than their league position is because of the points deduction. They're in with the shout of that barrage.
And it would be great to see...
down in ninth.
Yeah, I'm going to get to Breathing, one of my petty fours, actually, because I've got a question for you. But if you've been listening to last week and the week before, Rose Beef's absolute hero, friend of the show, Montauban Fly Half, Buzz Vial, an outrageous break from him for the Montauban try, which he looks like one of those tens that's just enjoyed, the blood sausage and the baguettes and the crossroads a little bit too much. But he did a marvellous job, and I was delighted to see that.
Because... there was an element of like watching your old man in a lads versus dads game, and suddenly the gap opens up, and he has to kind of remember what he used to do, and he's like, "Oh yeah, no, I've still got this.
I've still got it." And then he's going to go off into the sunset for his couple of pints because he's done his once a season job
and a cigarette. Yeah,
yeah. So, but there's some fantastic games next weekend. We've looked at Rodit here, and Rob, you're going to talk us a little bit through National, where Narbonne drew an 8,000 crowd. For
8,000, is that the final number? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. One of the things. It is a derby game against Carcassonne, and that is not far away. But 8,000 in the third tier, that is incredible.
Unbelievable.
Isn't it?
Unbelievable.
I just want to. So this actually took me quite a while to get my head around because I was looking at the table. There is one round of fixtures to go, but some teams have played 25 games and some teams have played 24. And all of the fixtures, all of the sites just said there's one round of fixtures left. And then I did a bit, I kept looking. And actually, there's some games which look like catch-up games. I assume like some games are rained off or something like that. But this Friday, we have a repeat or a reverse. Carcassonne are hosting Narbonne.
Ooh.
So, yeah. To get them to up to 25 games. So Nice have played 25 games. They're on 88 points in first. Albi, also 25 games. They're on 86 points. Narbonne, 24 games, a game in hand, and this is their game in hand against Carcassonne. After their win against Carcassonne, are on 83, Carcassonne on 79 in fourth. So that win lifted Narbonne above Carcassonne. If they repeat the feat, they could go into second. Conversely, if Carcassonne kind of upturn the odds and win their game at home, they could overtake Narbonne and get into third again. And that takes us into the final weekend. So there is another catch-up game of, I think it's here versus Périgueux,
yeah.
And then in the final game, which isn't until the 27th, there is also one game there, Nice versus Albi, which is first versus second, separated by 2 points.
Wow.
Yeah, and Narbonne and Carcassonne have away games. So, and Narbonne are away to Suresnes, who are in fifth on 75 points. So it's all to play for in the top five or six. Chambéry are kind of also in the mix, but they can't get higher than fourth, I don't think. But, I mean, it's all going on. And they'll be, they'll definitely be wanting the home semis. It's not the kind of two places go up now because of the access match. Obviously, we can't watch it, but the crowd numbers in that league, fantastic. I think Bourg-en-Bresse got about 3,000 as well. Phenomenal. But I'd love to be watching some of those games as well.
Yeah. These leagues are the just the gift that never stops giving. Even when you go down the national, it still stays as tight. It's still the drama. Gonna have to find a way to get some of these in at some point into the travel schedule.
The mention of Bourg-en-Bresse there brings us on to the petty fours, and where better to start some petty fours than with a glass of wine, or as Bourg-en-Bresse are doing, their second ever edition of Sport and Wine, which is this Thursday, held at Bourg-en-Bresse's ground. Couple of speakers of note. One, Remy Lamarat, who owns a vineyard, former Bordeaux Clermont player. Other speaker of note, ahead of this game at lunchtime on Saturday, Christophe Urios, the director of rugby for Clermont, will be talking about his vineyard at the sport wine evening for Bourg-en-Bresse. I think there was like a cyclist and like a skier. Oh no, it was a cyclist and a motorsport driver. We're also going to be talking at this. But is there anything more French than a national team hosting a sport and wine evening and getting a top 14 head coach come down to talk about his own vineyard? Phenomenal stuff.
That's truly tremendous.
Yeah. And just before we get too carried away, because I, having texted you earlier in the week and texted Rich to say I can't find any petty fours, I found some stunners as well. But we will briefly hear from Richard, and he sent us some lovely in-depth views on the games, basically saying all the things that we said pretty much. Although it seems he managed to see more of the Montpellier game than me and Reese put together. However, we'll just have a little intro, and we can blame it on the Costa Rican Wi-Fi, because I think that's why these didn't come through earlier. But
hello, gents. It's your Central American correspondent who unfortunately has not found any Central American rugby stash whilst I've been out here. There are a lot of fantastic, genuine, fake bits of football kit, but nothing on the rugby front. But I will keep looking, as that is obviously the main purpose of this trip. Fantastic weekend of Champions Cup rugby by the sounds of things. I saw about 11 minutes of highlights across a couple of games, one of which might be slightly unexpected. Big shout.
Well, that was Richard's view. The rest was, again, as we said, repeating a lot of things we just said. But nice of you. We'll just get, so just you remember his voice and be prepared for Cast coming back home to top 14 rugby next weekend.
Just a taste, guys.
Any pity fours or digestives from you this week?
Yes, I do have one. Yeah, beyond wondering where Christopher Urios is and spending more time on his side than
his vineyard.
Yeah, his wife. Perhaps that answers a few questions. So, Brive on Saturday sacked their attack and defence coach.
Yes.
Do you know the man that is mooted to come in to be defence coach for Brive next season?
Saw this on Twitter earlier today, and he coached with, I can't remember his first name, but Davidson at Cast. It's Joe Worsley, isn't it?
It is Joe Worsley, yeah.
Yeah.
So they could be looking at bringing the full Cast backroom team into Brive, which... interesting if you've ever seen Cass defend from a set piece, but you know whether.
Well, he was also at Bordeaux, I think, for a bit.
He was for a bit. But it's an interesting one, and with Christopher Urios. Well, they've all been in the wine. Wait till you go to one of those sport and wine evenings with Joe Worsley, Christopher Urios, one at Brive next season, maybe. But they've had a little bit of a wobble, but sacking the coaches on the weekend.
Did they sack Bruce Rayhana, or is he still there?
No, Bruce Rayhana's gone.
Ah, because I was like, they've got an all-star coaching lineup. They've got Bruce Rayhana as well. No,
Bruce
Rayhana's
been in the dust. He's going off to run a vineyard. He's got a sport and wine drinks next Thursday.
His son actually plays in Super Rugby, but yeah.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
That's what they call it.
Well, I've got a little bit of a quiz for you, Reese.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Barnaby Kuyu, the scrum half for Grenoble. I don't know for certain, but I'm going to assume he is. I'm pretty sure he is the brother of Baptiste Kuyu, given he's a nine who plays ink for Grenoble, which is obviously very near Lyon. He was looking for something on the pitch after the end of the game. Do you know what he was looking for?
the missing 8 points from the start of the year. that's an interesting one. Wedding ring?
No. He's looking for his front tooth.
What? Tooth.
Oh, he said tooth.
Tough.
Yeah. He was looking for his tooth on the pitch after the game.
It seems like quite a difficult thing to find. Oh, where did I lose that? Was it the 58th? Was it the 67th?
There's literally footage of him carrying around like one of those like shitty water bottles you get given at like festivals. Like,
what do you
just
do?
Like, hard, like,
what do you do when you find it? It's like cracked in two. You're like, oh, so the fabulous dentist down the road in Granorga was going to do a job on this.
Wow. I did want to touch on TV deals changes, but I think there's more to run on that. We're moving back to Premier Sports, apparently. I got an email about it. I don't think the coverage is going to change, but Viaplay are pulling out. So somehow we go back to Premier Sports. However, have you got any more petty fours or digestives? Because I have one that I've been so excited to talk to you about.
No, I will not hold you up another second.
And we'll finish on this. And I think we want to put this on our socials as well. So hopefully you guys will see it. But I'm going to try and send it to you real time. But there's some context needed, and I've gone to some real deep depths to give full context. So I saw this photo on Instagram. I think it was like Rugby Amateur FR. I'll find it and give them the credit they deserve. It was footage of Urunia versus Larasor. So they are both in the kind of Basque bit of the country. Urunia is very near Saint-Jean-de-Luz. It's very, very near the Spanish border. I've probably pronounced that wrong. Larasor is also very near that area, 20 kilometers southeast of Bayonne, near Espelette, home of Espelette Pepper. But they're very much in that kind of bottom end of the corner because, and that the way the leagues work, so they're in Federal 2B, and Federal is split into 20 divisions nationwide. So they're in Pool wow. 12 of, sorry, Excellence B, which is regional divisions. So, and also being Rosbys, there's a big connection here. This is footage from last weekend. It was the last game of the season. They're kind of mid-table. And it was also the festival. Let me find the correct name. It was the Bayonne Ham Fair at the weekend.
The ham.
An emblematic event promising an epic celebration of local gastronomy, showcasing the famous Bayonne Ham and wide variety of other culinary delights from the region. So that was last weekend. And I am going to send you now on Instagram, Reese.
Bayonne Ham is very famous, obviously, by the way.
I am going to send, yeah, Bayonne Ham, lovely stuff. I'm going to send you, if I can find it, if I can get this right. I'm going to send you footage from the 35th minute. And this is going to come through on Instagram, okay?
I want your live reaction.
I want your live reaction, and I want you to describe what you can see in the 35th minute of this game.
What the fuck is going on here? Sorry, I shouldn't use that.
Talk me through what you can see in that picture.
This is an absolute mind-bender. So there is... So what you can see here is it's absolute carnage. This looks like a...
It's like a war zone.
It's like a war zone.
It's like a scene from a war, maybe.
So you've got what looks like maybe a medic standing over somebody. Then the other side, you've got a load of players in green, most on the floor, some standing up. Then behind them, you've got half a dozen players on their hands and knees in varying states of one looks completely collapsed as if he's been shot through the back. Then in varying phases of like hands and knees, slightly sitting up, one person as if he's crawling back over a trench or something. It is absolutely... And then there's one winger on the end who looks like he's just had enough. He's going to walk off into the distance straight back to the ham festival. He's like, nah, balls to this. I'm back off. There's a load of ham and wine out there.
So
extraordinary.
I wanted to understand like quite... I had to really... This is tough. It's tough to do in England because I wanted the comparative as well. But it's tough to do in France. They play in Excellence B, which is, I think, the ninth tier of French rugby. So it goes top 14, Pro D2, National, National 2, Federal 1, Federal 2, Federal 3. So Federal 3 is the seventh tier. But you also have within that, you have Federal B, which is the reserve teams from Federal 2. And then you have Excellence B, which is the reserve teams from Federal 3. So these guys could play in the seventh tier. The equivalent in the UK, so that took me a long time to work out in French, trying to navigate the FFR website. The equivalent, so just to give you a bit of context, in England you go Premiership, Championship, National 1, National 2, Regional 1, Regional 2, Counties 1, Counties 2, etc. And then it goes, I think you go below that maybe. London Welsh are in Regional 1, which is the fifth tier. And then you've got, so the kind of equivalent teams are kind of like Bournemouth 2s, Havant 2s. So like, these guys are pretty solid. They're not first team. Like, I don't think those guys would be getting paid, but they're
your
average bloke. They are pretty good rugby players. But I would love to know if there's an equivalent on the last day of the season in a game where there's nothing to play for and there's like some sort of hog roast fair down in Bournemouth or something. If there's like an equivalent scene from the weekend in England, but just the state of this despair and hurt that those guys are going through after 35 minutes.
This really is one of those ones where, do you know when you and I'm sure many people will, whether it's Hindu or Stag Day, if you're listening, when you're sort of on that final day and you're having those drinks waiting for the, you know, your plane's in 6 hours and everybody is on their knees. This is the similar sort of scene where they, you know, I can imagine there's a couple of 1,000-yard stairs knocking around. If you could zoom in any closer to those players.
I'm going on a stag do this weekend. If I end up looking like any of half the blokes on that pitch, I'm not going to be happy with myself.
The personification of this photo is Richard on his final day of any European holiday where he's just had enough and he wants to go home, the towel's in.
And on that note, I enjoyed finding that. Rugbyamateur.fr, we will give you a proper shout on socials and share it properly on socials so that you guys can all enjoy this photo. But for now, thank you very much, Rhys. I hope you enjoyed your 2 week period. Who knows, you may be back. Hopefully not.
Yes.
But make sure you'll follow us on. So we're on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, all as @RosbeesRugby. Until next week, when we'll have more stories of European and French rugby. Thank you very much. Au revoir.
Au revoir.